The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! That's a buzzer!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame. It is episode 40 of The Crossover Podcast. Here on 960theref.com.
When do we start getting paid to do this?
I know, right? Yeah, that's the main question that both of us have, but we continue to press on in the hopes that maybe that'll come in some form of, like, back payment. So we'll just go ahead and dive right in today. Plenty of good stuff to get to. And before we dive into topics we're actually going to spend a lot of time on, which include the NFL draft, kind of looking forward to that with the combine coming up and everything, and some of the projections on where Georgia guys are going to go, we'll take a look at that. We'll also take a look at the Braves as they head into spring training. They're getting ready to start another season. What exactly does that mean? How good will this team be? I think the Vegas numbers say somewhere around 75 wins, which is kind of what they've been the past few seasons.
Yeah, I saw the Braves, what were their mantras basically to exceed expectations.
There you go.
Like, well, I mean, when the expectations are so low, wouldn't you have – I mean, a higher goal, like maybe it'd actually be really good or something.
So if the Falcons were embracing the suck last year, then the Braves will be trying to overshoot the suck, maybe?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, just exceed the already low expectations that people have for the team.
So we'll get into them, and we'll get into a pretty good start for the Georgia baseball team in their weekend series against Georgia Southern. We're recording this on Wednesday. I know by the time it comes out Thursday morning, they will have either won or lost against Kennesaw State, but we'll mainly just reflect on what they did against Georgia Southern and having a pretty good series. So we'll do all that. But first, this past weekend, the national anthem was disrespected in a way.
It was.
That it has never been disrespected before. A lot of people are getting mad at Colin Kaepernick for disrespecting the national anthem. I'm taking it a step further, and I'm going to say what Fergie did, because she was actually performing it, was way more disrespectful towards the national anthem than anything I've ever seen.
It was a bad performance, and I was actually watching it, and I changed the channel after she, "Oh Say Can You See," and then when she pulled, like, the, you know, the drawn out "By the Dawns,"
yeah,
I went like, okay, this isn't going well, and I changed the channel. And I don't remember what I turned to.
Oh, but why'd you change the channel?
Well, because it was uncomfortable. I could tell it was going to be uncomfortable. And like a few, I mean, like, it seemed like a while later, but then my aunt texted me and went, "This is all anybody's going to be talking about from this All-Star game." And I flipped back, and like, she was still singing it. Mm-hmm. And I did. I mean, the thing clocked in at like 2 minutes and 37 seconds. So when I say, like, I feel like I changed the channel for a couple of minutes, I did. And when I went back, she was still singing. And you know, like, I saw Draymond Green with that that grin and all that, but yeah, it was. I've said before, like, I don't think the national anthem needs to be played before every sporting event. I mean, it's not played before before every other, like, entertainment. You go to a show on Broadway, they don't do the anthem. You go to a movie, they're not doing the anthem. But for whatever reason, sporting events is like this one form of entertainment that we all consume, that they feel like the national anthem needs to be played before it. But when you see, like, what Fergie did, and, like, even in the past, what, like, Roseanne has done to it, or Carl Lewis, it's just like, I mean, you know, it's that's sort of the point of, like, well, there's, you know, why are you going to do it after, yeah, before every single thing? Because it just kind of, like, you know, waters it down then.
Yeah, and I'll say this, like, I understand everybody trying to do their own spin, because the national anthem is something that's done a lot, and maybe they want to be remembered for it. But at the same time, like, you've got to have common sense to know this isn't a song that I need to sing like I'm trying to seduce the prime minister or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was like Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday to JFK.
Exactly. I mean, just very sultry, very smoky, sensuous, uncomfortable is,
yeah,
the best word. Then you used that word a minute ago. And I just didn't understand. Like, and Dave and I have talked about this in the morning show. It's like, it's kind of like Butch Jones with the trash can at Tennessee. He came up with that idea, or somebody came up with that idea, and he approved it. There wasn't one person in the room that was like, "Hey, coach, that's a bad idea." And it's almost like with Fergie, who has to have been rehearsing this for a couple weeks leading up to it. You don't just go in there and sing it. So there wasn't somebody in her inner circle, her entourage, whatever, that was like, hey, yo, Fergalicious, that might be a bad idea to sing this song like that.
No, because she's a pop diva, so there's probably no one that she surrounds herself with that could tell her no, other than maybe like Will.i.am or something.
Right, well, that's the thing, that her contemporaries, and I don't know if they knew about how she was going to do it going into it.
I doubt it.
Good grief. Yeah. Like, that was one of the worst things, and the way that she was stressing certain, so we're like, banana, yeah, way, yeah. Like, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, she's like, I guess she's an artist, and so she figured, like, I'm going to attempt to put my different spin on it, but that's just not a song you
but
do
is she,
that.
Though? Like, in terms of an artist? Like, because she's not, when you listen to her music, she's not like a classically trained singer, it
no,
doesn't
but,
sound
I mean,
like, and she's more popish, and there's a lot of auto-tune and stuff like that. So.
Still, I mean, I you know, yes, I mean, I consider her an artist, whether you like her music or not.
That's fair.
And so she's trying to, you know, put her own spin on it. But that's just not a song that I think you should be putting your own spin on it. Like Pink, the way she belted it out at the Super Bowl, that's how that song needs to be handled.
Well, I almost think that at this point, we need to ditch people singing it. Like, before the Georgia basketball game this past Saturday, the performers of the National Anthem were like some UGA like trombone ensemble. And I was talking about this with people at baseball the next day. I was talking about it with people at the basketball game. That's like the best national anthem I've ever heard in my life. It
yeah.
was really good, really classy, and you don't have that opportunity, really, for somebody to take an artistic license, I guess. Maybe other than like when Jimi Hendrix played it on the electric guitar, but that is widely regarded as one of the better national anthems.
Right, and Carlos Santana's done it.
He did it
at,
as well.
Golden State
Metallica
Warriors
games. Metallica did it at a Warriors game, too.
Slash has done it before Dodgers games. But yeah, they're...
Even like these guys that you would think aren't... You don't think are like super patriotic or like... You don't think of as like, you know... national anthem type people like a Slash or a Santana, because they're playing it with their instrument, you know, it sounds really, really nice.
Yeah. The years ago, there used to be this kid that they would have out at Georgia baseball games every now and then who played it on a trumpet. And he just, like, he was cool. I think he went to Athens Academy or something. But he had these shades on, and he would have a hat on. And then, he'd put the hat on the ground, and he would just belt that thing out in, like, a minute. And it was done. It was awesome. He was really good and talented. But, to me, that's how the anthem should be.
Maybe we should just get away from people singing it. And I know that there have been some great singers of the national anthem over the years. Lady Gaga did a really good job before the Super Bowl.
She was fantastic. Pink was fantastic.
But that's the thing, you know? I mean, if you're going to have someone like Fergie do it and really try something different with it, it fell flat on its face. And the camera shots got laughter, like you mentioned earlier, from Draymond Green, Jimmy Kimmel, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. I mean, all these guys are shown laughing during the national anthem. And that's the thing. You can't have that either. And I know they're not laughing at the national anthem. They're laughing at how ridiculously bad this person is performing it.
Yes.
But still, that's not a good look. When
they're disrespecting the anthem by laughing during it, though, no?
They are. But then again, it's not their fault. You know, I don't blame them.
I know. I'm kidding. Yeah,
I know what you're saying. But I'm just saying, like, it was just awful. So,
you know what else disrespects the flag, though? Is like when the Houston Astros, when they won the World Series last year, and that one dude was wearing American flag Speedos.
Oh, yeah. And the flag does get, that's the thing, we pick and choose when we want to be offended by the
yes,
use of the flag.
I would like to point out that that Houston Astro disrespected the flag more than any kneeling NFL player has.
Yeah, or like when like an Olympian like gets draped in the American flag and then they like take a knee and like sink to the ground, or like the flag's touching the ground, you know the American flag is never
supposed to touch the ground.
Right?
In fact, I had a friend of mine who was in the Navy, and there was like one night we were driving past this park, and it was like in the middle of the night, and the flag was still up.
Mm-hmm.
And now apparently the flag isn't supposed to be displayed.
Dark, right?
Well, if it is displayed at night, there has to be a light shining.
You have to be
on
sure. You're right,
right? It was just dark, and there was no light shining on it. So he pulled in and like took the flag down and like took it home.
Good for him.
Yeah,
like, that's the thing. And military people know the traditions of the flag about as well as anyone.
Yeah, but he stole the flag, though. He took it home with him.
And look, I, you guys know I post this on social media a lot. I love my nephew to death, but, you know, my grandfather, when he passed away, the military came out, and they did, like, the gun salute, and then they gave us the triangle fold flag, you know, and we put it in the display case. And I was at my grandma's house the other day, and my nephew was like trying to mess with it and like pull it. And I kept telling him, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. You can't mess with that. And finally, I kind of snapped. I was like, hey, stop doing that. And he started crying. And I'm like, ah, I don't want to make you cry. But at the same time, you know,
yeah,
you have to learn at an early age, don't mess with the flag.
Don't disrespect the flag.
Don't disrespect the flag. Yeah. So definitely a very interesting start to the All-Star game, which overall, I thought the All-Star game was one of the better ones I've seen just in terms of the competitiveness. I know that I had kind of said that it was nice to see pockets of defense at times, although Dave told me your take was, I don't know how much defense it was, right? These guys were just playing horribly and missing shots and taking bad shots and throwing the ball away.
That's how I felt. I mean, it was like they were just trying trick shots, a lot of passes. I mean, there was one time they just – someone heaved the ball down court, and there were like two other – I mean, there were two guys standing in front of – and they just – it was like an interception. And so, yeah, to me, I didn't see it as much as like those guys were actually playing like hard defense.
There were some pockets of defense, though. Like there was one time late on in the game – when Kevin Durant and LeBron like trapped Steph Curry, and like so, it was nice to see a little bit more competitive juice. The dunk contest had its moments, but still kind of fell flat. Like Victor Oladipo should never be allowed to dunk again. He had Chadwick Boseman, the Black freaking Panther, sitting courtside, and he gives him the Chadwick Boseman gives him the Black Panther mask, and he goes on to like fail his dunks like twice, and then finally puts one in. It's like, dude, you can't do something like that if you're going to screw up so much.
Yeah, that's got to be a really good dunk.
Especially when the star of the movie is the one that gave you the mask.
Yeah, I watched the first quarter of the game, and I felt it was boring. I turned it off.
Yeah, like, I mean, there was definitely those moments, and you know, I think that it was more intriguing just because of the way that they approached it. But also, Kevin Hart, you need to take a step away from Hollywood for a little bit.
You didn't think it was funny when he was yelling at Kyrie Irving, hey, man, the earth is round.
That was funny. But I'm just saying, oversaturation. There's
too much of him.
Well, that thing that he did with like Rob Riggle and other people.
I didn't catch that part.
That was awful.
I saw that when he was introducing the lineups.
Well, right, but that was even before that. It was like a 20-minute musical just about like Kevin Hart. It was awful. So,
oh, yeah.
You
That's
know, just step
much.
Away for a little bit. Maybe let people forget about you and then come make a big comeback.
But what you said, that the gimmick did work, though, because that's the only reason I even bothered to tune in the first place.
But they got to televise it, the draft.
They need to televise the draft, yeah. But the gimmick did work because it got me to at least watch the game and give it a try. And but, I mean, after the first quarter, I just thought it was a bad game. It was boring because I flipped it off.
We haven't talked much NBA on the crossover, mainly because the Hawks have been terrible. So it's been kind of nice.
Well, they're doing what they need to do. They need to suck, and they are.
They do. Yeah. They do. Although, probably not draft Trae Young anymore. Oklahoma and Trae Young have taken a nosedive recently.
What is it?
Not
six straight losses are sitting on as we talk now.
Yeah, and Trae Young got held to what? Like, I think it was like 11 points or something the other night in their blowout loss to Kansas. So, yeah, from a guy that was like the next Steph Curry, let's pump the brakes a little bit.
Well, and then even, you know, Marvin Bagley's been out the last couple games for Duke, so he's been hurt.
Luka Doncic, Real Madrid forward. That's who the Hawks need to draft. Yes.
What about the big 7-footer at Arizona? Ayton.
Yeah. I just don't think size, like in terms of like normal traditional size, is something you need to be focused on anymore. If you're gonna go size, you need to go one of these new wave bigs like Joel Embiid, like Ben Simmons.
Right.
That can step out and shoot.
Yeah.
Because that's the way the NBA is going now. And Luka Doncic is kind of one of those guys, one of those Euro bigs that can step out and shoot. I mean, all I know of this guy is what I've seen on YouTube, because I've seen him kind of linked with the Hawks in terms of mock drafts. What I've seen on YouTube's really nice. I don't know if it would work out in the NBA, but looks pretty good.
Well, I mean, you know, those European guys, I mean, there have been enough of them that have come to the States and been, you know, star players that I don't think you could just, like, pan them because they play in Europe.
Right. No, I think it could be successful, but we'll see what the Hawks do. Moving along now to preparations for the NFL draft, and one of the dumbest quotes I've ever heard related to an NFL prospect in my life comes to us from supposedly one of the smartest men in terms of personnel decisions in the NFL or related to the NFL, and that's Bill Polian, former Colts GM, obviously the architect of, or one of the architects of Peyton Manning's time in Indy. Basically, he was asked about Lamar Jackson, and he says that Lamar Jackson is better suited as a wide receiver in the NFL.
Right.
And here's his justification, which, again, one of the dumbest things
he's
ever
been on this kick the whole time.
And there is a dot, dot, dot here in the quote I'm reading, so there is some stuff left out, but you'll get the gist. The more you see him with the ball in his hands, the more you're going to say, I got to find more ways to get this guy the ball in his hands. That translates to another position. Timeout. No, it doesn't. Get the ball in his hands more. The quarterback touches the ball every play unless there's a direct snap or a punt or something. Like, wow.
Yes.
What a stupid thing to say.
Well, he also commented the other day, apparently, that he didn't think Jackson was tall enough to play quarterback in the NFL. And, like, he's 6'3". And so, I mean, he's more than tall enough to play quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, so Russell Wilson at what, like 5'11", 6
yeah.
feet, like, you know, or 6'1"?
I think he's been corrupted, unfortunately, and his brain has been compromised by the ESPN hot take machine, maybe, because, I mean, along with the Colts, don't forget, he was also the architect of those 90s Buffalo Bills teams.
That's true.
But even when he's thinking that the Eagles shouldn't even entertain offers for Nick Foles unless it includes 2 1s and 2 2s, this is a guy
Nobody's
that traded.
Doing that.
No, absolutely not. And he's a guy who traded a Hall of Fame running back, Marshall Faulk, in his prime for a second and a fifth round pick. And now he thinks that a guy in Nick Foles who's been cut like four different times, you should only get a 2 1s and 2 2s for him. I don't know. I mean, ESPN, I think, is – the hot take machine.
The dark side has corrupted his mind.
Yeah, I think it has. But he's been on that Lamar Jackson kick the whole time. And I get it. There's no way he's ever watched Lamar Jackson play.
Well, no. I mean, not if he thinks, A, he's short, and B, that in order to get a quarterback the ball in his hands more, he needs to switch to a different position.
Yeah.
Or how are you going to touch the ball more as a wide receiver than a quarterback?
Or when you're worried that the guy is like, you know, that he's run first when he's not. I mean, Lamar Jackson can run if he needs to, but in that offense at Louisville, no. He looked to throw the ball first, and he threw it a ton there.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this a little bit on this podcast, a crossover on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Chris Brame with you. You and I think both agree that Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson are the two most talented quarterbacks in this draft.
That's who I like. And Mayfield seems to be moving up now a lot in these mock drafts.
He does. And here's the thing about like a Baker Mayfield. It's like, especially having been at the Rose Bowl and watching it in person, I was blown away by that kid in game. Just watching like him orchestrate that offense, watching him make quick decisions, watching him escape, watching him extend plays. I mean, he's not Johnny Manziel. He's not Russell Wilson. He's not any of these guys. He's Baker Mayfield. I made this comparison. I think this is a pretty accurate comparison on the morning show with David Johnson the other day. I think he's like Alex Smith body with Brett Favre brain. Like a guy that can move. You know, Alex Smith isn't
right.
The most...
The Favre part worries me, though.
Well, gunslinger, though. And that's what I mean. Like a guy that's willing to take risks. I'm not saying he has the Brett Favre arm, and he's probably not going to rely on his arm or be overly confident in his arm to where he's going to make too many mistakes. That's what Brett Favre's biggest problem was he was overly confident in his arm. And Baker Mayfield doesn't have that kind of arm. But he's got the Alex Smith kind of style in terms of the arm strength isn't great, but it's good enough to move the ball. He's mobile, but not overly mobile. He can make plays with his feet when he needs to, but isn't going to rely on that overly or be too concerned with that. So I kind of feel like that's an accurate comparison. He's much more of a playmaker and gunslinger than an Alex Smith, though.
Yeah, I've liked him the whole time. And the other point about the Rose Bowl is he was doing what he was doing against an excellent defense.
Right.
That's going to have Roquan Smith's probably going to go in the top 10 of the draft. Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy are going to get drafted. Adam Sanders is going to get drafted. I'm sure I'm leaving someone out. John Atkins is probably going to get drafted. He's been invited to the combine. So it's going to be a big draft for a lot of those guys on Georgia's defense. And Mayfield, that first half. I mean, now it was a chess match, and you know, Kirby versus Lincoln Riley. They went into the locker room, and Kirby definitely figured some stuff out. And what they have, one offensive touchdown in the second half of that game. So Georgia's defense locked him down, but you know, Mayfield was a huge. He was the difference in that game. And yeah, I mean, that thing's, to me, it was like Deshaun Watson those 2 years against Alabama's defense. Is why I thought like Watson was a guy the NFL needed to draft. It's like, just look what he did against that defense. And so what Mayfield did against Georgia's defense, you know, just adds to how impressed, you know, I was by what I saw in the Rose Bowl.
Oh, that's a great point in the sense that he's doing this against top-level defenses. And one point that Dave made to me that I really agree with is, you look at Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, all three of those guys play for teams where probably 95% of the time their team had better players than the other team they were playing against in college.
True.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Baker Mayfield made the most of that. You know who didn't? Donald Rosen.
No.
And they were playing against about as bad a defense as Oklahoma was most of the time. But the difference is, like you said, when Oklahoma played against a really good defense in Georgia, Baker Mayfield was not the reason they lost.
And I watched the USC-UCLA game, a little bit of it last fall, and the halftime score was like 13-6 or something. I mean, it was like, so here were Darnold and Rosen. You're looking at these two premier like NFL prospects, and neither one of them was doing anything against the opposing defense. You know, before we started doing this, I think one of those, either McShay or Mel Kiper, had another edition, the latest edition of his mock draft, and did have and had Rosen getting drafted, I think, by the Dolphins at number 11, which really disturbs me. But the point there with Rosen is suddenly like his stock appears to be plummeting. So, and Mayfield's is going up, and that's, yeah, that's the funny thing about the whole draft process is these guys now won't have played a down of football for however many months, and they somehow their stock is lowering and rising. So yeah. Rosen went from a guy that was like the Browns or the Giants are going to take him at either one or number two, and now they've got like the Dolphins grabbing him at number 11. Please do not do that, Dolphins. Please do not take that guy.
Especially because losing faith already in Ryan Tannehill?
Well, absolutely. That's no doubt about that. My dream is that Mayfield is available there, but I don't think he's going to be.
Probably not.
I mean, Mayfield's going to end up being gone. I would take Lamar Jackson. I like Lamar Jackson, too.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Although, if they take Lamar Jackson, you think they'll put him at wide receiver so he can touch the ball more?
Well, knowing the Dolphins, they probably would. See, that would be the funny thing. Their quarterback was a receiver in college.
And they made him a quarterback.
And then they would take this guy who was a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in college. College and put him at receiver. That would be a very Dolphins thing to do.
That sounds mad Dolphins-ish.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind him taking Roquan Smith. I'd sign off on that, too.
Oh, no doubt
they
about that.
They got Raekwon McMillan, so they could have Raekwon and Roquan at
both from Georgia.
In linebackers. Yeah.
Both
from Georgia. One of them played here. The other one didn't.
And one of them almost didn't play here. Thank goodness for the Falcons hiring away that UCLA linebackers coach.
Well, yeah. Well, he was their defensive coordinator, and he's the Falcons.
Right. But still, thank you.
Well,
thank
and
you,
listen, Falcons. We got to give credit to like Jeremy Pruitt for that too, because when he committed to UCLA, Georgia didn't just say, "All right, we're done." They were like, "Hey, you know that your coordinator's leaving, right?"
What?
Yeah. All right. You know, he took the Falcons' job.
On to Athens I go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a very nice get for the Dogs. Right there. Couple more things on the NFL. I know I said we're going to talk about the Braves. I lied. We're not going to talk about the Braves.
We mentioned them.
We mentioned them
at the very beginning.
That's true.
That their plan is to exceed the very low expectations everyone has for them.
We're not going
to
go any more in depth on the Braves because I have a couple more NFL draft questions before we jump to some Georgia baseball, or I guess not questions, but topics. First and foremost, Mel Kiper's Mock 2.0 came out today. He's still got Josh Allen number one. It's like, dude, come on. The dude with the big arm and 50-something percent completion percentage playing against also-rans most of the time. It's like, dude, that guy ain't going number one.
Well, and this is this continues to be the question I ask now about these mock draft projections. Is Mel Kiper projecting Josh Allen is going to go number one because Mel Kiper believes Josh Allen is the best quarterback in the draft?
Well, it's like he got on that ship and he's going to sink with it.
Well, but here's the other thing. Or is Mel Kiper projecting Josh Allen is going to go number one because the Cleveland Browns own that pick and they don't know what they're doing, so they would take Josh Allen.
If they take Josh Allen number one overall, the NFL should probably go in there and strip them of a franchise. Move that team somewhere else.
Yeah, and that would be my question I'd have for Mel Kiper. It's like, do you think he's going number one because you genuinely think he's the best prospect or the best quarterback of the draft, or you just think he's going number one because the Browns have that pick and they would make the worst possible pick, which that would be.
Well, he made some interesting comparisons to Stafford. Stafford had a completion percentage in the 50s in his time at Georgia in the 3 years he was here.
He played in the SEC.
I was going to say, there's a big difference in having that completion percentage in the SEC and having it in, what, the Mountain West, I believe is where Wyoming is. So, you know, if he goes number one, whatever. And here's the other thing. Because the Cleveland Browns are so dumb, if you were the Philadelphia Eagles and you got a phone call from the Cleveland Browns, and they were like, hey, we'll give you the number one overall pick and our first second-round pick for Carson Wentz. And you're the Eagles. You just saw Nick Foles win a Super Bowl for you. Are you thinking, I mean, I think you have to think hard about that. I know that it would be really weird PR-wise because Wentz has built up some fans and built up a fan base. But at the same time, if you're Eagles fans, you got to be like, well, we could get a really high second-round pick and a really high first-round pick, maybe the number one, maybe the number four, for a quarterback who is a good quarterback. But as we just saw, we didn't need him to win the Super Bowl.
True, but I don't think you could do that if you're Philadelphia. The thing with Nick Foles is like the time keeps going on now between the Super Bowl and where we are
right
present day. Is what do you think is closer to the truth about who Nick Foles is? Is he that guy who had one really good month of play, and it was a huge month? I mean, they won two playoff games and then the Super Bowl.
Oh, and go back to 2013, too, because he had a really good pocket of play back then.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he's not awful, but he is still a guy who has been, like, cut by four different NFL teams. Now, one of those teams was coached by Jeff Fisher.
Thank you for bringing that
but
up.
But Andy Reid cut him, got rid of him, too. And the Eagles, I guess, had previously gotten rid of him also. So, I mean, that's the thing with Foles. It's like, what is the reality of Foles? Is he the guy we just saw for three games in January and the first Sunday in February, or is he, the truth lies probably somewhere in between?
I was going to say, he's probably somewhere in the middle, but I think the trade...
I don't think you could get rid of Wentz.
I think the hypothetical trade would at least be worth exploring, because if you're Philadelphia, you're kind of playing with house money right now. Well, won the Super Bowl.
But how old is Foles now? He's like 29 or 30?
Yeah, I mean, he's up there.
I mean, he's got potentially some good years left, but I don't think you could just... I don't think if you're the Eagles, you could just suddenly...
Well, I think PR-wise, I don't think your fans would like it very much. But that's the thing. You know, I think when I originally saw this post was that the Will Cain from ESPN said, if you're the Browns and you have the number one and the number four, you know, what if you offered those, the number one and number four, to the Eagles for Wentz? If you're the Eagles and they're offering you one and four, I think you got to take
that.
Well,
the thing with the Eagles, though, and I don't know with the salary cap, that's something you got to consider.
And these
with
are
the
hypotheticals
NFL.
As well.
But. Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, you're going to have to pay then a number one and a number four. But I mean, the thing with Philadelphia, that's a really good, well-rounded, solid, and deep team. I mean, the fact that Nick Foles was able to come in and they won the Super Bowl proves
one of the best defenses in the NFL, great skill position players. They did this without Darren Sproles, keep that in mind.
Yeah, and I mean, their offensive line is good. Like, a year ago, the Eagles got off to a hot start in Wentz's rookie season.
They beat the Falcons, and that was like the Falcons' worst game that year.
And I remember like the second or the third game of the year last year, they crushed Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
But then Lane Johnson, their left tackle, got hurt, and suddenly, like, oddly enough, their rookie quarterback began to struggle.
Yeah, imagine that.
Until they beat the Falcons.
So the NFL draft coming up between now and then and the combine, we'll have plenty of talk about that, as I know Brain loves watching guys work out for hours at a time at the NFL.
I'll be interested this year, I guess, in keeping tabs on what the Georgia guys do or whatever.
And the quarterbacks, because I think there's a real disconnect between a lot of smart NFL people in terms of who the best quarterbacks are.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen those quarterbacks in college, so I still lean on what I watched them do in college, and that's even my position on these Georgia guys. It's like, what is Sony Michel going to prove to me when he goes to the combine and like runs the 40 or does the hopscotch or whatever they do there? It's like, the guy can play.
Yeah.
All you got to do, if you want to watch what Sony can do, just put that Tech game on. And there was the one play where he juked the Tech defender and scored a touchdown. And then there was that other play. It was a third down. And they had three guys in the backfield. Looked like they were going to hit him for a loss. And, the next thing you know, he just, like, wiggles.
Yep.
His little sidestep looked like a video game. And he hit the Y button and was moved on for a first down.
All right, last but not least on this edition of the crossover, really quickly, we'll hit Georgia baseball. Great season opening series there against Georgia Southern. You get the win. You win two out of three. Your starting pitchers looked really good all weekend. I thought Kevin Smith was really good Friday. Emerson Hancock, the freshman, was very good Saturday. Honestly, they didn't win on Saturday because the bullpen wasn't able to hold it. And then Sunday, Chase Atkins with six scoreless innings, I thought, looked really, really good as well. So a big question mark was going to be Georgia starting pitching. They look good. I think the offense looked pretty good for an opening series. Now I just think we've got to figure out the bullpen situation.
Yeah, because if Georgia didn't rally in the ninth inning Sunday, they'd have ended up losing two games where their starting pitchers didn't give up a run. Right. And to have squandered those two starts would have been, I mean, really, I, it's I know it's early in the season, but it would have felt like a disaster to coming off a year where Georgia was at no point above 500 to be sitting there maybe 1-2 and drop your opening series with the starts they got Saturday and Sunday would have just really cast this season already in a pretty negative light. But, you know, the big takeaway for me I saw was the team walked 10 guys this weekend, and that was the between walks and wild pitches and hit batters.
They had 10 walks in the first game last year.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, hitting batters last year, balks and those kinds of things. I mean, there were just so many free bases that pitching staff gave up. So it was a good sign coming out of the first weekend.
And I think this team's going to be led by, in terms of offense, they're 2-3-4 hitters. So you got Keegan McGovern in the 2 spot, Cam Shepherd in the 3 spot, Michael Curry in the 4 spot. Oh, they all had good weekends.
Oh, so, huge, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, if Georgia's going to have a much better season this year, it's going to be those guys that carry them on offense. It's going to be the starting pitchers, the weekend guys, if they can continue to pitch well. And then, you know, Coach Strickland has to figure some stuff out with the bullpen in terms of finding that right mix of guys to put in certain situations. But I really liked what I saw this weekend. And, again, the resiliency on Sunday to come back after Keegan McGovern puts you up 2 and then Southern scraps back in to go into the bottom of the ninth and fight back and win that game. Again, you like to see that kind of stuff early in the season.
Yeah, and McGovern drew a big walk. Shepherd had the sack fly.
Yep.
Shepherd, what was he, 4-for-4 on opening night?
Yeah.
And then, you know, like McGovern hit a home run too. So I think we knew going into the season between McGovern, Shepherd, and Curry, Georgia did have like 3 pretty potent bats there. You know, the rest of the lineup, we'll see how it ends up shaping up. But, you know, the biggest question mark for me was that from last year, I thought it was the pitching. And you got a new pitching coach, and I think after the first weekend of the season, there was definitely a more encouraging sense you're getting out of that now.
He's Chris Braham. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Crossover. 40 episodes in the books. Kind of hard to believe. And we'll inch closer to 50 next time with episode 41, right here on 960theref.com. Thank you so much for listening. Back next week. Talk to y'all then.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Braham on 960theref.com.